Welcome to Local Matters, Mountain Express's weekly news podcast. This is Margaret Williams, news editor, and I am joined by senior news reporter David Forbes, who has a story about hip-hop in Belshire.
Indeed. As a matter of fact, we broke this investigation online just before Belshire, but we have a version in print in our next edition that kind of goes into even more depth into this interesting conflict. Essentially, after looking through emails from earlier this year, Express found that Sandra Travis, who's the director of the Belshire of the festivals division and is oversees Belshire and a number of other city festivals, had called DJ Kool, who was being put forward by some members in the community and some Belshire board members as a hip-hop act for Belshire, called him too big of a risk, and also talked about need for worries about crowd control, need to talk with APD. So we kind of investigate what went on in that discussion, a discussion in which while members of the board, including the board chair and the music chair, were both very much in favor of booking this hip-hop act, they said it's a positive message that needed to happen. There's been a complaint for years that that genre has been ignored.
Well, that's kind of what started the story. Someone posed the question to you, there's no hip-hop at Belshire.
Well, the question has been out there for years, In response to those public concerns, we made this request. I wanted to see what was the discussion that had gone on here in the city. Why was there, when the lineup was initially proposed, no hip-hop in the Belshire lineup? And it turns out there was a very interesting story. There was this movement began over Facebook and Twitter to kind of coalesce around DJ Kool. He's best known for his 1996 hit "Let Me Clear My Throat." There are several versions out there, but he's kind of has a history of of being active in hip hop's earlier days. And he says he's also talked to us, and he says he was called up by city officials, and he said they were afraid. He didn't understand their fears, and he said they acted like it was the first time they'd done this kind of festival. He joked that if they were that afraid, and they shouldn't put on a festival, and should just stay in their houses and lock the doors. It's caused a little bit of an outcry in the community as well. Tim Smith, who wrote an opinion piece for us on, it's a local promoter and blogger, he's gone to the media about this. And in the discussions, there's a lot of argument between some of the city staff and the production manager hired by the city, who are against.
There's
a lot to this story, a lot of moving parts, certainly. But
and there's been a lot of interest online. The story
certainly
broke online, and there were a lot of interesting comments to that.
Indeed, there were a lot of feelings about it. Kind of the feeling that the board, the Belshire, the majority of the Belshire board had, was that this was an absolutely fine act, was absolutely safe, and that the some of the critics of the city's conduct in this have said that it reveals a number of outdated prejudices, especially about the genre of hip-hop and what it implies, and that it's time for Asheville to move past those. The city, on the other hand, has asserted that the risk they were talking about, and there's another point where the city mentions they need to consult with the APD before booking a hip-hop act, they claim that consultation did not happen. Sandra Travis's claim that the risk she was referring to, and some of the city staff are referring to, was the risk of not bringing out enough people to justify DJ Kool's inclusion. So, I mean, that's their story. But in this case, it was the volunteer board for Belshire had recommended this act be included, and the city staff were the ones who vetoed it. Travis claims she vetoed it because there was a argument. Debate going on. The argument mostly seems to be between two of the board members, the chair and the chair for the music, and a man named Bill Clark, who is the head of who's hired by the city to manage as a production manager for Belshire, and he had objections. He had objections to DJs in general playing, and he also had objections. He called DJ Kool quite. He was put him on a list of questionable acts early in the discussion process. So there's a lot to this, and I encourage people to check it out. We go in a lot of depth about how this decision happened, what were the fears that the city staff were expressing, and I think it shines a lot of light on why this decision gets made, how the festival gets programmed, and some of the debates over what Asheville's biggest festival and the Southeast's biggest street festival, what it should be going forward.
Well, good. Thank you for doing that story, David. You also looked into, went to the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting yesterday, the 3rd of August, and mainly to hear about what they're doing with the food truck issue.
Yes, I did. And this is actually, this is kind of, I guess, the second big step for the food truck issue. Food trucks are currently allowed in the city with some restrictions. They are not allowed in downtown, however. And some rules that would allow them in downtown would allow 10 different food vendors in downtown. Then they have passed the Downtown Commission in July on a 7-2 vote. They made their way to the Planning and Zoning Commission. City staff have presented this and present a favorable recommendation on it. The new rules, they say, allow for enforcement. They allow for issuing of permits. They've said they've spoken to the police, and they don't feel enforcement's going to be an issue, and that the food trucks have to abide by the same inspection and safety standards that restaurants do. Buncombe County deals with the inspection end of it. However, the meeting was extremely contentious. You had a lot of restaurant owners saying they feel the enforcement provisions are not strong enough, that they are worried about this infringing on their business. Many of them expressed respect for some of the food truck entrepreneurs, but said that they felt that this ordinance was not adequate and opened the floodgates, I think was one of the terms used, to having unpermitted food trucks in downtown. The ordinance also expands the hours for food trucks to 3 a.m. If they're not right near a residential area. That's outside of downtown. In downtown, they can stay open till 3 a.m. And it does have requirements about noise and power and some other technical issues. But a number of the restaurant owners and the opponents of this, of lifting this ban, have said, this current ordinance that's being proposed does not do the job. There's, how are you going to get inspectors out there 3 a.m. and things like that if you find an unpermitted truck? The food truck owners, on the other hand, they're saying that, it's time for this ban to go, that it's an unreasonable restriction on their ability to make a living, and that food trucks, and a lot of them want to be a part of Asheville's thriving food scene. Susie Phillips, who's runs Gypsy Queen Cuisine, said that she hopes to use this as a stepping stone to a bricks and mortar restaurant. But that, they said that they're interested in helping to find and enforce this ban, as far as the permitting. If they see an unpermitted food truck, they'll notify people about it. And that, a lot of cities are doing this and have done so successfully. And that's kind of their assertion. And in the end, the board split. It was a 3-3 vote, and you had some members. Jerome Jones was one of them, saying that, the time has come for this. He said he eats at restaurants, enjoys them, eats at food trucks and enjoys it, and he doesn't see, thinks it's time to provide this opportunity. On the other hand, you had Buzzy Kennedy, who's another member, saying that, restaurant owners pay high taxes and they bring money into the community, and he'd be angry if he was a restaurant owner and people were going to come in on, they were going to allow people to come in on their business. And people had some of them had concerns about enforcement. Even the ones who were in favor of it mentioned that they did want to make sure the enforcement, talk to the APD and make sure the enforcement was possible on this, which staff said they have. But so it was a 3-3.
So with that split vote, what happens next?
What happens next is because this is something presented by staff, it does go forward to city council. First is going to stop on the 16th. It's going to go before council's Public Safety Commission. And after that, it'll go on to council itself on the 23rd. That's the thing. Planning and zoning is, in some cases, they have the final say or something can't advance without their endorsement. But in a case like this, it can play, but it technically has a negative recommendation because there wasn't a majority in favor of it.
Well, interesting. We'll stay tuned to see how that shapes up.
Indeed. It needs to be a very contentious issue.
Yes, well, thank you for joining us, David. And now we'll hear a word from Christopher George, who attended the Buncombe County Commissioners meeting and has a report on what they did.
This is Express reporter Christopher George. And this week I covered Buncombe County Commissioners. The meeting wasn't very long this week. It was a little longer than an hour. And the main thing that was approved, the biggest thing that was approved, was a agreement allowing Inca High School to lease their roof for a period of 20 years to a solar developer who will install on the roof of the high school a photovoltaic as well as a solar thermal system. The agreement is pretty complicated. The way it works is Inca leases the roof to the solar developer, who then gets to sell the energy from the photovoltaic system to Progress Energy, as well as claim the tax credits and whatnot, and also claim another type of rebate for the energy produced by the solar thermal system that would have otherwise been used to heat water for the school. The school is actually not using any of the energy from the photovoltaic system. They are, however, using the solar thermal system to heat some of their water. How much was not exactly specified. One aspect of the deal is that after 6 years, Inca High School has the option to buy the system from the solar developer, who is yet unnamed because they haven't decided who they're going to go with for the installation. They get to buy that system from them, and then at a depreciated value, and then the school will get to claim all the tax rebates and things like that. They'll also be responsible for maintenance, which during the first 6 years or beyond that, the solar company themselves is responsible for the maintenance of the system. The real immediate benefit to Buncombe County schools would be purchasing the solar heated water from the developer at a lower cost than they would normally pay to heat water and with natural gas or electricity. Commissioners also heard the county's annual tax settlement report. This is a report where the county tax director, Gary Roberts, tells commissioners how much tax they collected, what percentage they collected of the levy, and that happens to have been 98.67%. The total tax levy was $153 million, and there's about $1.6 million still uncollected from that. And that number broke down. They collected $143.3 million in regular property taxes and $7.6 million in vehicle taxes. That percentage, that 98.67%, is more or less average for what the county has been able to do since going back to 2004. And that's really what went on at your county commissioners meeting this week.
And that's it for Local Matters. Stay tuned to next week. Thank you.